Alexei is our postdoc at McMaster, and he joined us in September, and since then we've had tremendous progress working on this project, and so he could easily have been here to give this talk. So Tom mentioned FIMAC, and I should say, for those of you that don't know about FIMAC, yes, three representatives of FIMAC here today. It's the Financial Mathematics Lab at McMaster, and that's been going on for 6 years now, and we produce some excellent graduate students trained in research areas of financial mathematics. So we've been focusing on credit risk this year, and this work here is part of that. So we have quite actually, I didn't ask Tom, should I be figuring on ending in an hour? Is that okay? So it's actually there's a lot to say in this work, and I want to pitch it in a way that hopefully mathematicians will pick up some of the fundamentals, even if they haven't had much exposure to these ideas before. The model that we've worked through is, which we call the affine Markov chain model, has a nice mathematical flavor to it. And so hopefully the model itself will be very clear. When we get to the middle of the talk, collateralized debt obligations, these are complicated objects. And so if you come away with an idea what they actually are, then maybe you'll have gotten something out of the second half of the talk. So, well, credit risk, I have to say something. What is it? Well, it's the risk of financial losses due to changes in the credit quality of a counterparty. If you've lent money to somebody, they may not pay you back. If it's a company, they may, well, unexpected changes in the credit quality of a counterparty would mean that perhaps a loan that you made to somebody isn't quite as valuable to you afterwards. So if the person or company fails to make a payment on the debt, if the company actually goes out of business, and so the question is, how much interest should you charge when you're lending money to a risky counterparty? So the answer to that question, how much interest, is expressed in terms of what's called credit spread. And credit spread is given by a formula. It's to say you compare a risk-free loan to a risky loan. And so if you lend if you compare the price of a riskless zero coupon bond to a risky zero coupon bond, a zero coupon bond could be thought of as a fundamental loan that you could give to a corporation, then the credit spread is given by that formula. Okay. So it's basically the average interest rate, or the average increase in the interest rate that you charge to the credit risky counterparty over and above the risk-free rate. Okay. So understanding and modeling credit risk, you have to understand the risk-free interest rate. You have to have some modeling of the event that the counterparty fails to make a payment of some sort, or doesn't honor or fulfill their obligation. So we'll call that a default event. Now, what will happen is, when you're talking about corporations, do everything they can to service their debt, but at some point they may give up. And so so usually defaulters model is happening once a company defaults, and then that's just one single violation of their credit obligations, and thereafter they go into bankruptcy proceeding or something like that, and all their loans are put into a basket, and a big you have to decide that what of all the creditors, which of all the creditors get paid and how much. So a default event basically triggers bankruptcy proceeding. So as part of that complicated process, the creditors will hopefully recover some of their money, and that would be the, so we need to understand the recovery rate condition on default. So there's a more subtle thing that you need to understand if you're going to go further. So the risk premium, the amount that investors demand when they're lending money to risky counterparties, they demand an excess interest rate, and that's called the risk premium, credit risk premium. So you'd have to understand that as well. So I'll tell you a little bit about intensity-based modeling, because our model is based on this. There's a second approach to modeling called structural models. I won't tell you what that is. I'll just point out a key feature of the structural approach. And what we'll see is that our affine Markov chain model, in a sense, bridges between the two modeling approaches. So the intensity-based modeling, mathematically, the default time is just modeled, what we say exogenously, that the default happens at a stochastic intensity. So it's an unpredictable event, and what you model is the probability that it happens in the next instant in time. So the stochastic intensity lambda at time t denotes the probability that the default happens in the next interval dt, given that it hasn't happened at this point. So that says this formula here, the probability of default happening in the next instant is lambda times dt. Okay. So I want to introduce a y of t, which is 1, which is, let's see, get this right, it's it's 1 while the company is not in default, and jumps to 0 at the instant that the company defaults. Okay, so keep y of t in mind. Okay, so survival probability is the same thing as the probability that y is 1 at time t, and the standard formula is that that's a probabilistic expectation of e to the minus integral of the intensity ds. Okay. Okay. So, in the intensity-based approach, essentially, the key thing is to specify some dynamics for the intensity. Okay. So, usually, it's modeled with an analogy to the risk-free interest rate process, and And this is very much connected with fitting the dynamics of lambda to the actual observed prices of credit instruments like bonds and things like that. Okay. So the basic, as I say, the basic credit security is a zero coupon bond. A zero coupon bond, you remember, is a contract which specifies the payment of the principal on a certain date, and no coupons or any interest payments before that date. Okay, so it's the simplest sort of way of it's a basic building block for more complicated bonds, more complicated credit securities. Okay, so in this framework, the zero coupon bond price, if you assume that no recovery is made in the event that the company actually defaults, then the formula is given for the zero coupon bond price as an expectation of the exponential of the integral of the risk-free rate plus the intensity. Okay, so notice the survival probability expression in the middle here, and here's the expression for the bond price. The actual risk-free zero coupon bond price is the same as this with lambda equal to zero. Okay, so as I said, the basic description of the credit, or the answer to the question, how much interest should you charge to a credit risky counterparty, is expressed in terms of credit spreads. So here I'm giving you a typical graph of what credit spreads are like in the intensity-based modeling approach. So these are three curves showing three different types of curves that might arrive for different counterparties, and so they can. So the horizontal axis is the term of the loan. So remember, the credit spread refers to the extra interest that you add in for a loan of that period. Okay, so just here's a different kind of graph. These are the credit spreads that come out of the other modeling approach. These are typical of the credit spreads that come out of the so-called structural models. And you see the big difference. These intensity-based models typically have spreads which go to asymptotically for short-term loans to some positive value, whereas in the opposite modeling approach, the structural models, which I don't have time to tell you what that is, but they always have credit spreads which go to zero over short time periods. So what we're going to see later on is the ability to switch between the two different kinds of credit spreads curves. Okay, so I want to tell you now about the model. And so what's the aim here? The aim was to generalize the intensity-based modeling and include features that are like the structural approach. And in fact, what we're going to do is known as credit migration. So that's what we're going to put together here. Now, there's two papers that we have on the web, and if you're interested, you can look on my homepage. Unfortunately, this particular slide didn't make it into the handout. So I added this at the last minute. So at the end of the talk, you might want to come and ask me if you want to get the paper. So the idea is we're going to generalize this process. Why? Remember, why was this process that keeps the value 1 while the company is not defaulted and then jumps to 0 at the moment of default? So Y then has 2 states, 0 and 1. And the intensity is just the intensity or the rate, the probabilistic rate for jumping from 1 to 0. Okay? 0, notice, is an absorbing state. Once the company's defaulted, it stays defaulted. Okay. So what we're going to do is credit migration, and so instead of having 2 states, we're going to have k plus 1 states. 0 will be an absorbing state. That's the default state. The remaining states you can think of as the credit rating of the company. Okay? You don't have to think of it that way, but for this talk, maybe I'll certainly talk as though it's these k states are the rating classes as defined by, say, Moody's credit rating service or Standard & Poor's. So we're going to have k plus 1 states, and we're going to keep the stochastic intensity lambda, and we're going to have the probability of changing from state I at time t to state j at time t plus dt as being a transition matrix Lij times the stochastic intensity times dt. So that's our simplest generalization to the two-state intensity-based model. Okay, and at the end, we'll talk about generalizing this, but at the moment, we're going to see how far this takes us. Okay, so here are the ingredients of our model. We're going to have stochastic risk-free interest rate can be modeled. It can be included in the model. Okay, the recovery rate is going to be a stochastic process. Okay. We're going to have the default process y of t. It's not really, I should have called it the credit migration process y of t. It has a stochastic intensity, which is a positive process. And it has a matrix of transition intensities, Lij. And 0 is an absorbing state, so that says that a certain row in that matrix is identically 0. Now, this formula here is true only if I is not equal to J. So I should have said when I is not J. It doesn't add up if you try to force that to be true when I equals J. Okay. So L is a stochastic matrix. Okay. Default time is the first time that Y hits the absorbing state. Okay. So, as I said, when in the intensity-based model, Y is simply measures default or not default. But in the affine Markov chain model, when Y is in state I, that says we can think that that means that the company is in the I's credit rating. And when Y is 0, that means that a company is defaulted by that time. So, when the special case, when you only have 1 rating class, then our model, of course, just reduces to standard intensity-based modeling. Yeah? That's absolutely true. So, in the long run, everybody's dead. All the companies default in the long term. Okay? Yeah. So, perhaps not. But I don't think it's, I think it's arguable. It's a question of how long companies will stay alive, I think. But in this model, companies eventually default.
But you would have to wait a very long time.
That's right.
Far longer than the length of the model.
That's right. That's right. So, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here. The formula we get then in this model is essentially, I wanted to show you the structure of the formula before we actually derive it. You see what happens, the probability that at some time t that you're in state j, given that you started at time 0 in state y, amounts to computing expectations where you, expectations of the integrated intensity multiplied by constants, and then sum over k. Now, I'll explain this more later, but these are eigenvectors, and this is a matrix of eigenvectors. This is the inverse of the matrix of eigenvectors, and the alphas are eigenvectors. All of the stochastic intensity, or the stochastic matrix L. Remember, we had a k plus one matrix, and so essentially, this is the form for the basic transition probabilities. Okay, so in the intensity-based model, of course, it looked like that. Okay, now, going through without any further modeling, you can start to write down prices for things. The defaultable bond with zero recovery, this is a zero coupon bond, can be written, so this is a bond which pays you a dollar at time capital T, but only if the company is not in default. Okay? So that's the expectation formula, and then you can reduce it to this formula, which makes it look a little bit like an intensity-based formula. Okay, so now the only thing is that the intensity becomes multiplied by these coefficients alpha, and you've got a sum over k plus 1 different eigenvalues. Okay, so this was the formula for the intensity-based model. Okay. Now, we weren't quite happy with just using the language of intensity. We found it more rather nice conceptually to think in terms of stochastic time change. So what you notice is that everywhere in these formulas, lambda is always integrated. Okay. So basically, you can think of the integral of lambda as something like time itself. So we're going to focus on the integral of lambda. We're going to call that tau of t. So that's an increasing, and here, continuous process. Okay, dt, d tau is lambda dt. Okay, now, okay, so this gives us a useful mathematical framework, which is somehow easier to understand than what I said so far. So what we introduce is a Markov chain, y tilde. So I got a tilde over here. I had a y without the tilde before. And this Markov chain has a fixed non-stochastic generator. This is the matrix, k plus 1 by k plus 1 matrix. And the transition probabilities are now constant matrix times dt. Okay? So this is a standard Markov chain. And we're going to suppose that that independent of the tau process, which remember I was calling a stochastic time change. Okay, so the time change comes in, our y will just simply be the y tilde evaluated at the stochastic time. Okay, then you see we reproduce the formula for the transition probabilities of the y. Okay, so that just introduces L d tau, but d tau is lambda dt, so we get the L lambda dt for the transition probabilities of y. Okay, so y is the true credit migration process, but the y tilde is somehow the Markov chain underlying it. Okay. So in mathematics, we say that y is a Markov chain subordinated by a stochastic time change. Okay. So intensity-based models are often called doubly stochastic. That means that there's two forms of stochasticity. Here the two stochasticities are the Markov chain, y, and then independent of that, the time change, tau. So doubly stochastic. Okay, so now I'm going to start doing more details. Okay, well, the key idea is that we're always computing. I put those formulas up, and they all were of this kind of form, where we're doing expectations of exponentials of integrals of r plus lambda dx. Okay. But remember, lambda ds was d tau, so we're basically doing expectations like that. So it's pretty clear when we do our modeling that it's going to pay off a lot if we have efficient computations of those kinds of formulas. And the class of processes for which these kinds of expectations are very well studied are called affine processes. So, okay. So that brings in the affine, the A into the AMC. So, okay. So to keep it simple, affine processes are very flexible family of processes. They're used an awful lot in mathematical finance. But we're going to keep it relatively simple because in the end we want formulas which are highly computable, very effective formulas. And so we're going to introduce for the moment two independent affine processes, and we're going to build R, the stochastic interest rate, and lambda, the stochastic intensity, as linear combinations of these two independent affine processes. Okay, so I'll use this bracket notation to note an inner product or a linear combination of the two Zs. And affine processes have the very useful property that the expectation of their of the exponential of their integral has a very simple exponential affine linear form. So, well, if you like, the conditional expectation at time t. No, I shouldn't say that. Yeah. So. You see, the initial condition, Z0, enters in to this expectation just as exponential affine linear. Now the phi function and the psi function here, we're going to arrange it so those are explicit formulas. Okay? Okay. Well, there's one further thing that's very useful to do. We noted that that lambda was always integrated, so we called that tau, the integral of lambda, we call that tau, but that would mean that tau is continuously increasing process. But actually, now that we've focused on a stochastic time change, it's very useful to allow tau itself to jump. So let's add a third process, Z3, which actually is itself a pure jump process. Okay. So it'll turn out that I'm going to show three different Zs, and they're going to lead to different effects. And they're quite nice. So we have three Zs to think about. And so Z1 what we want to do here is show the three distinct ways that companies' defaults or default probabilities behave dynamically. So we're going to have a diffusive part to these intensities. We're going to have a jump part to the intensities. And then the third thing is a jump part to the actual time. Okay? So the diffusive part is modeled to be a Cox-Ingersoll-Ross process. And one way of expressing that is to write down the Markov generator of the process. And so here you have a Markov generator, which is a second-order differential operator with an X coefficient on the second-order term and a linear mean reverting term on the first derivative. So if you translate into a stochastic differential equation, we have a square root of x in the diffusion term, and we have a mean reverting linear drift term. Okay? So that's the Cox-Ingersoll-Ross process. The reason we're using these is the formulas are very explicit. These are models that have been very well studied, and we can just carry over vast amounts of understanding. So the second Z2, we're going to model that as an affine process. It's going to be a positive process, and what it does is it jumps by an amount H at random times with a jump rate lambda, and then after a jump, it mean reverts to zero. So I'll show you a picture of all this in a minute. So the Z3 part is a simple jump of the time change itself. So we got So the number of parameters here, two parameters here, two parameters here, and only one parameter in the Z3 part. They're all normalized so that their average intensity is one per unit time. Yep?
I don't understand the
Z3 is actually, if you think in terms of time change, it's where the time jumps forward, say, 1 year. And what that means is all the companies that could default in a year somehow defaulted simultaneously. Okay? So it's a feature that people want is the idea of simultaneous defaults. Okay? So here's sort of a picture. The blue line shows you the Z2, a typical sample path from a Z2 where it stays zero and then it jumps by a certain amount and then exponentially decays. And then it could jump at a future date as well. Okay? This yellowy green curve is a sample path of the CIR process. And the red is showing jumps of the Z3 process. This green curve is the integrated CIR. So that's the integral of the diffusive part. And now this is showing the actual stochastic time change. So this is which resulted from those putting together those three different ingredients. Okay, so there you see the jump in Z3. There's another jump in Z3. Here's where the jump in Z2 occurred. So you see that the clock started ticking very fast for a while. It went, so the market somehow was going fast, and then it slows down to its normal state. And here's the time jumping. Okay. Well, I have to speed up. We've got these three very simple processes, and it turns out that all the key computations that we do reduce to computing sort of expectations of exponentials of those processes. Okay, so we have a G1 function, a G2 function, and a G3 function referring to Z1, Z2, and actually, no, not quite. G2 is a derivative of G1 with respect to some of the parameters. So you don't need to look carefully at the formulas. It's just that I've shown you how they're all kind of the same type. And these are the building blocks you need to reduce all computations to something explicit. And they are explicit. We give the formulas in our paper. Okay, so let's now focus on the industrial application. Typically, we have 7 rating classes ranging from AAA, which is very, very, very strong company, to CCC, which is means borderline, already defaulted, a poor company. Okay, and here's a typical Markov generator. This was extracted from, actually this came out of somebody else's paper, Gerald Landau and Turnbull in 1997. So we just took this. Okay, and remember the formulas involved taking eigenvalues and eigenvectors of this transition of the Markov generator. Okay, so we fixed a bunch of parameters to draw some pictures. So now you can go through now and basically try to compute all possible credit important quantities. Basic things, from most basic things are rating transition probabilities. All the formulas just involve the G functions. Right. So given that the G functions are explicit, all of these formulas, I'm just going to flash through them. Rating transition probabilities. Probability density function. Price of a riskless zero coupon bond, risk-free bonds. Defaultable bonds with zero recovery. Defaultable bond with non-zero recovery. I actually have a stochastic recovery process in the model. Okay? Has exactly, basically, a formula of the same type. Okay. So let's just have some fun. So here's, when you look at a company, you'll see that bonds of different periods that the company has issued have different interest rates or credit spreads attached to them. And then you can plot these as curves, which represent the maturity of the bond, the period of the bond. And so here's a simulation of a company which starts off at time zero as, I think it was a B-rated company. And so its interest rate, its credit spread curve over 10 years was fairly flat. And here we go. So, okay. So you see here, this just shows what you get out of these formulas, right? We just simulated what happened here is we put in the fact that the company was re-rated and it went from, I guess, B to double B, and so its interest, its credit spreads would naturally change. Okay, and then a second jump occurred at the end where the company went from a double B to triple C. Okay? And then all the stochasticity in between credit migrations was just the natural fluctuations in credit spreads due to the other, to the basic affine parts. So the jumps, the credit migrations are triggered by the Markov chain, and then the intensities are all triggered by the affine parts. Okay, now we've got seven different rating classes.
Your intensities have jumped as well.
That's right.
The intensities will jump at the same time as the interest, the
current. Can do. Can do, yeah. That's right. Okay, so now this is now a view of the market as a whole. So companies is, we have seven different kinds of companies, all with different rating classes, and then these are the credit spread curves, and then here this shows how the market changes over time. Okay, so this, the top, these are, the triple C is the top line here. The three worst companies are in the top graph, and the four investment grade classes are in the bottom. These are, this is 20 basis points. This is 20% interest rate for a triple C. Okay, so that you saw the fluctuations there, which is just entirely due to the stochastic intensity, the affine processes driving the Z processes. Okay, so I guess there's a jump there. Actually, I can go back and, well, anyway, sorry. I should be able to drag that thing around and stop it. But anyway. Okay. So, I'll just show you one graph. So this shows what happens when you vary one parameter in the model, then the curves, the credit spread change. Okay, so this is just varying the jump size of the Z2 part. Okay, you could show lots of these graphs, but obviously. Okay, so now I have to start telling you about CDOs. So CDOs are products that you get by taking many, you take bonds from many different companies and you package them together into quite complicated products, and so to model them, you have to model many companies jointly. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a large number, and we're going to have independent Y tilde processes, which are all these Markov chains. And so these represent the credit ratings of M different companies. And they're identical, which means that companies in the same rating class are, for the moment, going to have all the same credit spreads. Okay. And then you're going to have the affine part, which is, again, stochastic interest, stochastic recovery, stochastic time change. And the credit migration process is, well, the M companies are going to be their credit rating will be the Y tilde, the Markov chain, subordinated by the stochastic time change. So in this version, the stochastic time change is the same in all M companies. Okay? But the Y tildes are independent for the. So we have a way of, so conditional on the stochastic time change, the credit migrations are independent. Okay. And so we have default times for each of the M companies. Okay. Now I'm going to, so Tom asked why include Z3. Well, Z3 allows for simultaneous defaults of companies, right? So the clock could sort of jump. The artificial clock jumps forward a year. It's sort of as though a year's worth of companies defaulted on this at the same instant. That would be sort of, okay. A Z2 allows for clustering of defaults. Z1 is somehow the normal economy. Okay. So now you can go and talk about many firms' joint probabilities and see the formula just involves actually just involves the G functions again. I didn't write it out. That's right. No. Usually we don't include the Z3 in the short rate. No, you can't. The short rate never... No, we don't... It doesn't make sense to allow the short rate. Remember, R is integrated. So it's RDS. Okay, so we don't include a Z3 in the interest rate. The Z2 is a component of the interest rate. Okay. So this just shows you some joint probability distributions. You can get some wild behavior if you force it. Okay, so now I have to show you some stuff about CDOs. Well, I have to tell you a thing or two about CDOs. So take 100 bonds, take 100 companies, take 5-year zero coupon bonds for 100 companies, make a portfolio, supposing you have $1 billion portfolio. There's each bond is $10 million, and you've got 100 of them. Okay? Now you want to, as the lender, you've lent $1 billion, you'd like to be able to, in return, sorry, they're not zero coupon bonds, they're coupon paying bonds. So these loans of $10 million each to 100 different companies are generating an interest stream. Okay? You'd like to be able to recover your $1 billion principal by cutting up this portfolio and selling the pieces. Okay, each piece is called a CDO tranche. Okay, and each CDO tranche is a separate investment vehicle with a characteristic risk reward. So it'll get a characteristic rate of return, but it'll have a characteristic risk of default. Okay, so the so-called synthetic CDO tranche can be thought of as a swap between two. It's sort of like insurance. So So you can imagine two parties, the insurer and the insured. And the insured person buying insurance pays a premium. The insurer has to pay these insurance payments in the event of bad things happening. Okay. So the two components of this swap are more basic credit derivatives. Okay? Now, what determines the payment stream is the total losses by default that this portfolio of 100 bonds has experienced. Okay? So this L just represents the total losses due to default up to time T. Okay, so you've got a sum over 100 companies. We've got the loan to each of the individual companies is NI, called the notional value, and they may be different notional values. Okay. So L of T is the fractional loss. Now, the CDO tranche, there's six standard tranches now. I'm showing tranches French for slice, and of the six standard tranches, here's the fifth tranche, and this blue curve tells you what the premium, the rate that the premium is paid, and it also tells you when the insurance leg is being paid. Okay? So basically what happens is the fractional loss starts at zero at time t equals zero, and then over the 5-year duration it starts to mount up. And when the fractional loss hits the tranche, say the 15 to 30% tranche, then insurance leg starts to pay. Okay? So the premium leg is being paid while the total losses are below 30%. Okay, so here are the actual expectation formulas for the two legs of the CDO. So the premium leg has an expectation formula for its price. And maybe if you're experienced with these things, you can understand exactly what the implied cash flows are in a formula like this. But basically, the cash flow is occurring at a rate given by the U function. So while the loss, the U function is eventually zero, and it starts off at 1 when the loss is 0. Okay, so the cash flow occurs at a rate U, and then, of course, there's a discount by the risk-free interest rate, or risk-free discount factor. Okay, so that's a standard. So this is an idealized formula where the premium is paid continuously in time. It's just easier to write it. The insurer pays the slice of losses, and it makes payments at the rate proportional to DU. So the insurance leg is paid at a rate proportional to the default rate while the defaults are in the tranche. Sorry. Okay. Okay, so our main theorem is that both the premium and insurance legs can be computed as integrals over a single variable. X is something like a scale loss. The form is that it's a product. You take, there's two functions that you multiply together and then integrate 0 to infinity. Both the V and the W are like that. Now, the H functions are purely to do with the Markov chain. Okay? And the actual tranche function, U, and S is 1 minus U. So it depends on the tranche. It also depends on the initial credit ratings of all the companies. Okay? The F functions depend only on the affine part of the model. So it depends on the state of the interest rate, state of the time change process. Okay? And okay. So you can actually get very efficient computation because all the CDO tranches will have the same F functions. And so it's a very nice structure here. And it nicely separates out Markov chains from affine. Okay, now to compute things, there's various approaches. When you have equal notional amounts, you can compute everything exactly, but when you have unequal notionals, you should use approximation schemes. So this shows you six different slices. These are the six different H functions that enter into the insurance leg. So the six different slices that are the standard slices. And then the black curve is the F function that you combine it with to compute the insurance leg. So what you do to compute the price of the insurance leg, you just multiply the black function with the blue function for that tranche, and then you integrate 0 to infinity. And so that gives you a very pictorial view of how big that, how valuable that leg is going to be, right? So you can see that the lowest tranche here is going to be quite high, whereas the sixth tranche is going to be almost zero. Okay. Well, I'm not going to tell you about the approximation schemes. I got a little movie here. So we have various schemes. These are just the underlying probabilities of zero companies defaulted, one company defaulting, two companies defaulting. That's 0, 1, 2, 3 in the different approximation schemes. So you can use a normal distribution. Some people use Poisson processes. We find that actually using beta distribution is the best. So here's a... If you see the beta shows all the probabilities. The red circles are the true probabilities, and the blue curve is the approximate probabilities. So, anyway, we can measure the errors in our approximations. So, of course, there's so many parameters here that you can easily push the errors of the method off. But for reasonable parameters, we get reasonable errors with reasonable efficiency. And the computation time, why do we say it's fast? Well, we're computing six CDO tranches in half a second. So the blue line is showing basically our standard model computed on MATLAB on this machine. We compute six prices in half a second. The green curve shows the exact computation in the case of equal notionals. And you see that if you're going to do the exact computation, even with equal notionals, it takes longer for large numbers of companies. Okay. Well, basically, because we can compute fast, it's a piece of cake to grasp the dependencies. So these are various graphs which show the CDO spread depending on an underlying parameter. And in all of these pictures, the two red curves are the junior tranches, the most credit risky of the slices. And then the black curves are showing the senior tranches, or mezzanine and senior, the least risky ones. The fifth tranche is the least risky one. And the prices are quoted as spreads again. People like to quote prices as spreads. And these are just the interest rates over and above the risk-free rate that's natural for that particular... that's the interest... the cash flow that the tranche earns. Okay. And so it gives you some idea of what is sensitive to what. Okay. So various parameters which you can think of as being the health of the market or the state of the market, the general market conditions are these affine parameters. Okay. So you see some of the tranches can be very sensitive to some parameters. The third tranche was quite sensitive to all our parameters, at least in the range that we're looking at here. Okay. So one advantage of this kind of modeling where you have explicit formulas is you can actually differentiate your explicit formulas and get deltas and Greeks. So all the hedge parameters are explicit. So, there's two kinds of hedging that you need to do for a basket portfolio like a CDO. You want to hedge general market risk. That's just the change of credit spreads due to market conditions. But then you also might want to hedge against the default of an individual firm that's in the portfolio. The general market risk is the most important thing to do, and of course that's the easiest thing to hedge. Okay, well, I haven't told you anything about calibration. That's to say we haven't calibrated our model to anything. Okay, we've only been working on this for 6 months, and it'll take a few months for us to get some numbers out on this. We do need a data set, which we haven't got yet. There's many parameters to fit. We do have the Z process, an unobserved process, so you need some kind of filtering technology. A fundamental question is, what is the generator, credit migration generator? And Moody's credit ratings companies publish matrices. So we just use the published matrix. But in fact, to correctly fit market data, you have to do some trickery to that matrix. You have to somehow go to risk neutral transition probabilities. And that's okay, well, I've given you a very minimal model. It has these three affine processes. The formulas were very explicit, but it may be that you need to, in order to get adequate performance, you might have to do add more stuff than I've included. But the structure should remain the same. So the good thing about this model is that I think it'll appeal anyway to mathematicians who want to understand what the problem is about and want to understand the total market. So what we have is complete dynamics, self-consistent, okay? And it shows all the key features. It's immediate generalization of standard models, the reduced form, but it includes structural characteristics because our credit spreads can be zero or almost zero for short times. Okay. Computations are really fast, really slick. And the approximation schemes you can write down work really well for 100 companies. And the errors get better as you increase the number of companies. And if you, in our range, in reasonable parameter range, the approximation schemes give errors not worse than a basis point, so more or less negligible. So we have a very flexible correlation structure. It's extremely important when you have these basket products to understand how different companies are correlated. So it's very good if you want to just have a machine for generating scenarios. You can do Monte Carlo simulations of scenarios here. And you get analytic computation that reeks. It includes all the things that you really want for, from a fundamental point of view, stochastic inference, stochastic recovery. You can introduce more factors. I have a single stochastic time change. That's not going to work in practice, okay? You could have multiple stochastic time changes, say, in different sectors of the economy. But you pay in the calibration, and it slows computation down. Okay. Well, that's pretty much what I wanted to say. I just conclude by saying that we're looking to find interest from people in industry who are using these products. We'd like to see how these methods work on the kinds of products that people are actually trading. There's a certain amount of work, quite a lot of work, to get the calibration, get the actual parameters to fit the current market situation. But I think I've gone over time already, so I'm not going to say anything more.